गौरचंद्राय राधिकाय तदालय कृष्णाय कृष्णभक्ताय तद्भक्ताय नमो नमः। यं प्रव्रजन्तमनुपेतमपेतकृत्यं द्वैपायनो विरक्तात्रयाजहवः भूत्रैति तन्मयतयोतरवोभिनेदुस् तं सर्वभूत हृदयं मुनिमानतोऽस्मि। श्याम सुन्दर स्कन्दशेखर स्मरहा सुमुरली मनोहरा राधिकरसिक मम कृपानिधे स्वप्रियचरणकिङ्करीं कुरु। भुक्ताभिनय अपराधलक्ष्यै चिरुक्तश्च कहमादितरङ्गमद्धि कृपामयी त्वं शरणं प्रपन्नः वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं। तवैव अस्मि नाजवामि त्वया विना इति विज्ञाय देवी तं नयमां चरणान्तिकम्। फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल आई ऑफर माय सस्तन दंडवत पुष्पांजलि माय हार्ट लाइक फ्लावर्स थाउजेंड्स ऑफ टाइम्स एट द लोटस फीट ऑफ अस्मदीय परमाराधितम गुरुपाद पद्मा ओम विष्णुपाद स्तोत्र सत श्रीमान भक्ति वेदांत नारायण गोस्वामी महाराज। सेकेंडली आई ऑफर माय सस्तन दंडवत प्रणाम थाउजेंड्स ऑफ टाइम्स एट द लोटस फीट ऑफ माय श्री गुरु परंपरा एंड आई ऑफर माय प्रणाम टू ऑल द असेंबल्ड वैष्णवस एंड वैष्णवीस ऑफ यूजीन नमहता वंचकपुत्र विस्तार कृपा सिंह सो बाय द कोर्सेस मर्सी ऑफ श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग टुडे वी हैव द अपॉर्चुनिटी टू ऑब्जर्व नरसिंह चतुर्दशी। यू नो दैट परीक्षित महाराज ही पोज्ड द क्वेश्चन to Sri Sukadev Goswami. He said, it is stated in Shastra that Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is impartial. But we see that he takes the side of the demigods against the demons. So, how can we say that he is impartial? Oh, Maharaj, please remove this doubt of mine. So, when Shukadeva Goswami heard this question of Parikshit Maharaj, he explained to him that someone who is liberated from the gunas, the three modes of material nature, they are not affected by attachment and aversion in this world. They never think that this person is mine. He is my family member or my society, my community, and this other person, he's an outsider. And thinking in these ways, have partiality towards one person and neglect towards others. Now, even liberated souls who are not affected by the gunas, they think like this. So what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? His body is Satchidananda. It is made of eternity, knowledge and bliss. There are no gunas. There is no sattva, rajas and tamas in the form of the Supreme Lord. So there is no question of his being favorable to one person and unfavorable to another. This is a good test for us. If we are favorable to some and unfavorable to others, then it means that our consciousness is affected by the gunas. And so, if our consciousness is affected by the gunas, we can project our qualities of partiality onto the Supreme Lord. but really those qualities are not in him. Shukadev Goswami explained that in this world, sattva, rajas and tamas, they cannot increase simultaneously or decrease simultaneously. Always one of the gunas is prominent and it pushes down the influence of the others. And then by the influence of kal, the influence of time, the situation will change and another guna will become prominent and the others will be pushed down. So because of this, sometimes sattva guna is prominent in the universe. When sattva guna is prominent, then the brahmanas and the devatas, the demigods, they are in charge. And they rule over everything and they keep a stable and peaceful environment in the universe. But after some time, by the influence of kal, time, then rajas gradually rises up. And when rajagun, the mode of passion, becomes prominent, then the demons, they take over everything and make a disturbance in religious principles. But the problem with rajagun, the mode of passion, is that it is not stable. It's very unstable. The mode of passion comes, but after a few moments, very quickly it collapses and everything is destroyed because it turns to tamagun, destruction. So it seems that the Supreme Lord, he favors the demigods and destroys the demons. But actually, the demons are self-destructive by nature because they're in the mode of passion, which is unstable and always tends towards destruction. So, Srila Shukadev Goswami, he wanted to give an illustration of how the Supreme Lord is impartial. So he said to Parikshit Maharaj, once Yudhisthira Maharaj, he wanted to perform Rajasuya Jagya. And so for this, all of the various kings from different kingdoms around the world, they had to come and pay a tribute and give tax to Yudhisthira Maharaj. So they assembled in his capital. And before the sacrifice was to begin, the most elevated person must be selected and worshipped. So the youngest of the Pandavas, that is Sahadev, he suggested that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is here amongst us today, so we should honor him as the most elevated person in this assembly. So the sages and brahmanas, they all agreed with Sahadev that Krishna should be honored first. But there was one person in that assembly who did not agree. That was Shishupal. Now Shishupal, he had a long-standing enmity towards Krishna. First of all, when he was born with four arms. And an aerial voice proclaimed that if he will see someone upon seeing whom two of his arms disappear, then this is the indication that that person will kill Shishupal. So when Shishupal was born, Krishna went to visit the newborn baby because Shishupal's mother is the sister of Krishna's mother. So Krishna, in Mathura that is. So Krishna went there to bring some gifts, and when the baby saw him, two arms disappeared inside. So then the mother of Shishupal began to cry and said to Krishna, "Oh please, don't kill my son." So Krishna said, "Okay, I'll not kill him unless he insults me 100, more than 100 consecutive times." So then Shishupal's mother became quite confident because she thought, "I'll raise him to be a good boy, very polite. So if he's always polite, there'll be no opportunity to speak 100 consecutive insults." So she felt quite confident that Shishupal would be alright. But anyway, Shishupal grew up knowing about the prophecy that Krishna would kill him. And in addition to this, when Shishupal was about to get married to Rukmini, then Krishna stole away Rukmini and married her himself. So Shishupal was very envious of Shri Krishna. And now that Krishna was to be honored in the Rajasuya Jagya, he couldn't tolerate it for another moment. So Shishupal began to criticize Krishna. Who is this person? No one knows who his father is. No one knows who his caste is. When he was a boy, he lived in a village of Vrindavan. And there he used to steal, door to door. And he stole the clothes of Prajagopis. And he did so many things that bring disgrace on his family. And Shishupal was criticizing Krishna for one thing after another. Actually, we know that all the words of Shishupal, they're actually glorifications of Sri Krishna's qualities. But that kirtan is not considered to be bhakti, because his mood was not anukul yena Krishna anushilanam. It was not favorable to Krishna. He was speaking with an unfavorable mood. So as Krishna was hearing the insults of Shishupal, he was counting 97, 98, 99, 100 chakra. When the 101st insult came from the mouth of Shishupal, immediately the chakra cut off the head of Shishupal. And his body fell to the ground, and his atma came out from the heart and floated through the air and entered into the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So seeing this, Yudhisthira Maharaj was amazed. And he turned to Narad Rishi and he said, "Oh Narad, the yogis and jnanis, they do austerities and study and meditation for thousands of years. And even then, it's very rare that they will attain liberation. But this person, who is very offensive to Krishna, he has attained liberation. How is it possible?" So Narad Muni, he explained to Yudhisthira Maharaj, "Kamat dveshat snehat bhayat yatha bhakteshware mana avesya tadagam hitta bahova tadgatim gataha." He said, if anyone is absorbed in Sri Krishna, then they must attain a transcendental destination. Sri Krishna is not affected by praise or by insults. If someone will praise Krishna or someone will insult him, this is not his concern. Because he is the absolute truth, he is unaffected by dualities. So the only thing that is important is absorption in Krishna. Because he is the absolute truth. So in any way that anyone is absorbed in Krishna, then they must get a transcendental destination. So Narad Rishi said, "Kamad" means the gopis were absorbed in Krishna by feelings of calm, amorous love. "Dveshat" means enmity. Shishupal was thinking every day of his life, constantly, "I hate Krishna, I hate Krishna. He's going to kill me. I will kill him first." And these thoughts were always in the mind of Shishupal. So he attained liberation by dvesh or enmity. "Kamat dveshat snehat." Snehat means affection. The Pandavas are always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna with affection. And bhayat. Bhayat means by fear. Kamsa was always absorbed in Krishna with feelings of fear. So he was also liberated. Now Narad Rishi said, "Yatha bhakteshware manaha" means, and also the devotees, you can also be absorbed in Krishna by being a devotee. That means by hearing, chanting and remembering. And Narad Rishi included himself in that category and said that anyone who is absorbed in Krishna by any of these ways must attain a transcendental destination. Then Narad Rishi, he said, "Oh, those who are absorbed in Krishna by enmity, they have more absorption than us devotees. So Narada Muni was glorifying the absorption of demons, thinking that they are more absorbed than devotees like himself. So we should know that Narada Rishi was overwhelmed with the Sanchari Bhav of humility. And he was thinking that, I try to be absorbed in Krishna, but I cannot get the intensity of people like Shishupal. He wanted that intensity. So then, Narada Rishi gave an example. He said, Kisha pe sakrita rudha kudyayam tamanushmaram samramba baya yogena vindate sat surupatat. It means, there's a small worm called Telkatta. It means an oil stone worm. This worm eats into oil stone and makes a tunnel and lives in that tunnel in the oil stone. So once there was a Telkatta and he made a hole in the oil stone. And he was sitting there, but a bringi, that means a bee, came, a wasp, and blocked the hole where the Telkatta was living. And he wanted to eat the Telkatta. And he was blocking the hole. Of course, he's very big compared to the small worm. And the small worm was terrified. And the wasp was making a frightening noise. And it was vibrating in the hole of this small insect who was terrified. So this insect was hearing the sound of the bee coming to kill him. And he was so absorbed in terror and so absorbed in thoughts of that insect that was trying to kill him, that he transformed and he himself came out from the hole in the form of a wasp. So Narada Rishi gives this example from Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, in the Western scientific point of view, they say that the wasp stings the worm and lays eggs inside the worm's body. And after some time, those eggs hatch. And so another wasp comes out from inside the worm's body. This is the modern scientific explanation of the phenomena. But Narada Rishi, he's giving this example of the idea that by being absorbed completely in thoughts of someone else, one will transform and become like them. So Narada Rishi is giving the underlying principle of Raganuga Bhakti. The idea is that it doesn't matter whether you're male or female, whether you're black or white, whether you're young or old. It doesn't matter if you have been a devotee for one day or 100 years. Everything depends on avesh. Avesh means absorption. If one can become absorbed in thoughts of one's Ishtadev, following in the mood of the eternal associates of one's Ishtadev, then surely one will manifest a form like the form of those associates. This is the underlying principle of Raganuga Bhakti. And this principle of avesh, the success that comes from absorption, is dramatically illustrated by the fact that even someone like Shishupal, who hates Krishna, even he attained a transcendental destination simply on the basis of avesh, absorption. There is no other criterion to decide how one will enter into the absolute truth. Absorption is the only foundation. So Narada Muni raised the point that King Vena, in ancient times, he also criticized Bhagavan. But where did he go? He went to hell, yes. So it's not that you can become perfect by criticizing Bhagavan or his devotees. It's a question of absorption. King Vaina was offensive and King Vaina criticized Bhagavan, but he wasn't absorbed in that all the time. So he went to hell. So it's not a question of glorification or criticism. It's only a question of avesh, absorption. So now different people are absorbed in Krishna in different ways, but they don't all get the same destination. So one might say, this is also an example of partiality. But the answer is no. Krishna is impartial because for those who are absorbed in Him, He gives them whatever destination they want. So if one is absorbed in Him with a desire to be His eternal associate, one will become an associate. If one is absorbed in Him but doesn't want to serve Him, then Krishna reciprocates by giving that person sayujya mukti, impersonal liberation, and so on. So the different destinations within the sphere of liberation are not decided by Sri Krishna because of His partiality, but they are decided by the living entities, by their own desire and the way in which they relate to Sri Krishna. So, in this way, Narad Muni gave examples of how the Supreme Lord is always impartial. In order to illustrate this, he also described how once there was twin brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was the eldest, and both were the sons of Diti. So, once when the earth planets had fallen in the Garbhodaka ocean, the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna appeared as Varahadev to save it. And Hiranyaksha interfered with this pastime and tried to fight with Hiranyaksha. He'd been looking for Vishnu all over the universe to fight with him, but he could not find him because Lord Vishnu was hiding in the only place where Hiranyaksha would not look, his own heart. But because the earth needed saving, now Vishnu appeared outwardly as Lord Varahadev. So Hiranyaksha fought with him with so many weapons, and all of his weapons failed. So then Hiranyaksha tried to grab him and crush him. But every time he grabbed Varahadev, Varahadev manifested outside of his grasp. This is because any material attempt to grasp, that means even to understand Krishna's Naam, Rup, Gun and Leela, name, form, qualities and pastimes, it must fail. Because that which is transcendental is always beyond the jurisdiction of the material consciousness. Aprakrita vastu nahi prakrita gocha. The aprakrita substance, the spiritual substance, never ever comes within the jurisdiction of material nature. So he tried to crush him and grab him, but like a miracle, he was always outside of his grasp. And then finally, Lord Varahadev, he killed Hiranyaksha. And the widows of Hiranyaksha and his children and his mother, they were all lamenting bitterly. At that time, Hiranyakashipu approached them and he wanted to pacify them. So he told them, "Oh, please listen to a history. Once there was a king called Suyagya. And Suyagya was the king of Ushinara province. And he fought many campaigns. But in one campaign, he received the arrows of his enemies, and his limbs were broken, and he was covered in blood, and he died. So the soldiers brought his body home. And his family, they're also weeping. And their cries were so loud that they entered the ears of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. So Yamaraj came there in this form of a young, naked orphan. And the orphan approached the crowd of people, said, "Oh, why are you crying?" One old man said, "The king has gone away." The boy said, "The king went away so many times, he'll come back." The man said, "No, no, you don't understand. He's gone to that place from which no one returns." So the boy said, "I don't believe you. There's no place where you don't return from." And he went through the crowd and got to the front and saw the body of the king. He said, "Oh, you're lying. The king is here." So then they told him, "No, no, no. This is not the king. This is his body. The king is the soul." So then the boy said, "Oh, this is not the king. The king is the soul. Can you tell me? Have you ever seen the soul? How big is it? What color is it? What shape is it? What does it look like? Can you tell me?" So I said, "No, no. None of us have ever seen the soul. We don't know what color it is or what shape it is, how big it is." So then the boy said, "Every day, thousands of souls that you have never seen, they leave this world. So now another soul that you have never seen has gone. Why are you crying so much? You don't cry over the other ones." So then the boy said, "Okay, why don't we all get together and cry very, very loudly, and then perhaps the soul will come back." So they said, "No, no, it doesn't matter how much we cry, the soul will never come back." So the boy said, "Oh, then I rest my case. Why are you crying? It will not bring back the soul. You should know that in this world, everything is happening by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am an orphan. I have no protection of mother and father. And I wander in the forest with dangerous animals. And still, by the will of the Lord, I am alive. But there are other children. They have the care of their parents. They have wealth, money, and very good doctors. But they pass away. Why?" So when the Lord wants us to be in this world, we are here. And when the Lord wants to take us from this world, then we'll be taken. And this is His will. So there's no need to lament or worry about this. This is natural. Because it has happened to everyone who has been born. And it will happen to everyone, all of us now, and everyone in the future. So there's nothing unnatural about this. So Hiranyakashipu continued to explain that once there were two birds, male and female. And the female bird said to her husband, "Oh look, down there, there's some rice on the ground. Let's go and eat it." So her husband said, "No. You don't just have rice lying on the ground in the forest. Maybe it's a trap." His wife said, "Oh, you men, you are always suspicious of something." And she flew down and began to take the rice. At the next moment, the trap of a hunter fell and she could not escape. So then the male bird was very upset and flew down to the trap. And they're looking at each other through the ropes. And the male bird said, "Oh, do you remember the first time when we met? How wonderful it was." And they were remembering their relationship and crying. Oh, the male bird said, "Oh, if you are not with me, then who will take care of the baby birds?" And as they were speaking in this way and both were crying, then the hunter, who was in the bushes, released an arrow and killed the male bird and he died. Then he took both the birds on his shoulder and he went home and cooked them and ate them. So Hiranyakashipu described that, "Oh, in this world we are like this. Someone has passed away and we pass our time lamenting, but we don't understand that the hunter of death is waiting and will also take us in the meantime. So don't lose your life in this. Try to have a transcendental vision and understand the difference between the body and the self, and then you'll be free from all lamentation. When Hiranyakashipu spoke these words to the relatives, the widows and children of his brother, they became peaceful and they stopped lamenting. But then immediately after doing this, Hiranyakashipu, he went into his council of demons and he was furious. So he's a hypocrite. He was speaking spiritual knowledge to the ladies and children, but then he went into his council of demons and said, "Oh, for a long time Vishnu has been impartial, but now he's taken side of the demigods against us. So we will punish him and all of his followers. I will take my trident and I will cut off his head. And you demons, you should go to the earth and you should kill the brahmanas and you should stop the sacrifices and you should kill cows and you should uproot trees and destroy all sattvic brahminical civilization." So then the demons, they were very happy and they came to earth and began to wreak havoc. And Hiranyakashipu, he set off on his mission to kill Vishnu. So he thought, "I will develop all mystic powers and become invincible." So he went to the valley of Mandara mountain, and standing on the tips of his toes with his arms in the air, he began to perform very terrible tapasya, austerities. So after some time, fire was coming from his head and heating up the whole universe. Ants came and they built an anthill around him. They ate all of his flesh and only his prana was circulating in his skeleton. All the demigods were distressed by the heat of his austerities. And they went to Lord Brahma and asked Lord Brahma to make a solution to the situation. So then Lord Brahma, he went to the valley of Mandara mountain and he took some water from his kamandalu and sprinkled it on the skeleton of Hiranyakashipu, and at once he broke out of the anthill in a very beautiful, golden, youthful body. And with tears in his eyes, his hair standing on end and trembling in ecstasy, not sattvic bhav, rajasic bhav, he gave dandavat pranam to Lord Brahma, who had arrived there on his swan carrier. And he prayed to him, "O my Lord, creator of the universe, please give me the benediction that I cannot be killed by any creature created by you, not by any man, demigod or animal, not by any weapon, not during the day or the night, not inside my residence or outside my residence, not on the land, in the sea, or in the air." And then Lord Brahma, he raised his hand and said, "Tatastu, so be it." And Lord Brahma left. Then Hiranyakashipu, he thought to himself, "Yes, now I'm immortal, now I have all mystic powers, now my sovereignty will be unrivaled, and I will take over the whole universe." He was thinking like this. He thought that he was very intelligent. But Sri Krishna is more intelligent than anyone. He's always two steps ahead of everyone. Even before Hiranyakashipu went to Mandara mountain to perform his austerities, to take over the universe, the cause of the downfall of Hiranyakashipu was already in the womb of his wife, Kaihadu. So Sri Krishna had arranged that the great Vaishnav, Prahlad Maharaj, would be in the womb of Hiranyakashipu's wife. So this is the nature of materialist activities in this world. Materialistic people think they are very intelligent and they make a plan how to dominate and control and enjoy the world. But we should know that even before we make our plans to enjoy the material world, Sri Krishna has already made a plan to make it fail. So materialistic activities, they are completely futile. You cannot outsmart Sri Krishna. So Hiranyakashipu thought that he was so intelligent. At once he took over all the heavenly planets. And the demigods, they became like his maidservants. They would tremble in fear only when he raised his one eyebrow. And he was controlling the universe to such an extent that he even reversed the effects of karma. If someone did pious activities, they would get suffering as a result. If someone did impious activities, they would get material enjoyment as a result. If someone was doing yajna, then there was no rain. And if someone was doing sinful activities, rain would come. So he reversed piety and impiety within the universe. He was so incredibly powerful. And he did all this, even when he was rolling on the ground, intoxicated. So, after some time, Hiranyakashipu, he told his wife, "Oh, please bring my son, Prahlad." So Kayadu dressed Prahlad, who was only 5, in a very beautiful garland, sandalwood paste, and beautiful ornaments, and brought her son before his father. Hiranyakashipu was so pleased to see his child, very proud, and took his son in his lap, embraced him, sniffed his head, and with tears in his eyes, he asked him, "Oh my dear son, what are you learning at school? Can you tell me, what is the best thing that you have learned?" So then his son said, "Tat sadhu manye asurya varya dehina sada samudvigna diyama satgraha hitvatma patam griham andakupam banam gato yadharima sayita." Asurya varya, O best of the demons. Hiranyakashipu was addressed by Prahlad as best of the demons. He said, those souls who have accepted physical bodies in this world and are absorbed in temporary things, and because of this they are constantly embarrassed by one problem and one anxiety after another. It's very embarrassing for the soul who is transcendental and eternal to have a physical body which is assailed constantly by hunger, thirst, fatigue, old age, disease, and death. So he said, my advice is that one who is absorbed in the dark well of materialistic household life should immediately give up that situation and go to the forest in the association of sadhus and take shelter of the lotus feet of Hari. When Hiranyakashipu heard this, he became very thoughtful. He wasn't angry with the boy, because 5-year-old boy doesn't know anything. He must have learnt this from bad association. Perhaps some followers of Vishnu, his sworn enemy, the murderer of his brother, perhaps some Vaishnavas in disguise had infiltrated the palace and polluted the mind of this young, impressionable boy. So he wasn't angry with him. But he told Sanda and Amarka, the two teachers of Prahlad, who are the sons of Shukacharya, Hiranyakashipu's guru and guru of all the demons. He told them, "Be careful, guard this boy. It seems that his intelligence has been polluted by bad association. Make sure that no Vaishnavas try to secretly enter the palace and teach him the important things in life, like politics and diplomacy, how to divide and rule and acquire for oneself immense amount of wealth. Teach him all of these useful things." So Sanda and Amarka, they gave their word to Hiranyakashipu, "Don't worry, he's in safe hands with us. We'll make sure that he doesn't get any sadhu sangha." So they took him away and began to educate him. And then again, after some time, Hiranyakashipu told his teachers to bring the boy to his presence. And Hiranyakashipu lovingly took Prahlad on his lap and asked him, "Oh son, tell me, what is the best thing that you have learnt?" So then Prahlad Maharaj, without any fear at all, and very politely, he said, "Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, smaranam padasevanam, archanam vandanam dasyam, sakyam atma nivedanam, iti pumsapita Vishnu, bhaktischen navalakshana, kriyeti bhagavatya datan manyeditam uttamam." Prahlad said, "That person is the most educated. Indeed, his knowledge is perfect. Who, having surrendered himself at the lotus feet of Shri Vishnu, engages constantly in hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping the deity, becoming the servant and the friend of Vishnu, and surrendering his life, his Atma, Atma Nivedana, completely in the service of Shri Vishnu." Now when Hiranyakashipu heard this, he became ferocious and he pushed his son from his lap. He said, "Where did you learn this?" Prahlad Maharaj said, "Actually, my mind is like iron, and the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, they are like a magnet. So I cannot say how I have learned all these things. My mind is automatically attracted to the lotus feet of Shri Krishna, like iron is attracted to a magnet. This is simply the will of the Lord." So then Prahlad Maharaj explained, "Matirna Krishne parato satova mito vipadyeta griha bratanam adanta gobe vishatam tamishram puna punas charvita chavananam." He said that persons who have made a vow to be absorbed in materialistic life, then they cannot awaken Krishna consciousness, not by their own efforts or by the efforts of others or by a combination of both. Because their senses are uncontrolled, they sink down to the lowest, darkest regions of existence, and they constantly engage in chewing the chewed. Here, chewing the chewed means one's father, grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, and many generations. They all engaged in the same thing. They try to enjoy this material world by collecting money, name, reputation, family members, and so on. But all of them became disappointed and died in an unhappy way, having not had a life that was fulfilling. And then they went down into the darkest regions of existence. So this is called chewing the chewed. Each generation tries to chew the same bone that has no flavor inside. Srila Vishwanatha Chaitanya Thakur gives an example. Once a dog found an old bone that had no flavor, but he was chewing it, trying to enjoy something. While he did that, another dog came and began to bite him to get the bone, because he was envious. Another dog, and many dogs, they're all attacking him. So finally he just dropped the bone and sat to one side. And he saw that when he dropped that bone, all of his problems were solved. All the dogs left him alone, no problem at all. But the dog who picked up the bone, he was getting chewed up by all the other dogs. So, in this world, there are limited amounts of resources. And the living entities who want to exploit the world, they try to own them and control them. But as soon as they do this, they find that they're attacked by other living entities with the same ambitions. Whether it's gold or money or oil, we see that in the world, all are competing with each other, fighting with each other over limited resources. So, as soon as one gives up the attempt to exploit the material world, then also one no longer becomes a target for other materialistic persons to attack. So, Prahlad Maharaj gave this advice to his father. Now, in this verse he said, Griha Bratanam, those who have made a vow to be in household life. And in the previous verse, he said, Griham Andakupam, that one should leave the dark well of household life. It's important to know that Prahlad Maharaj is speaking about materialistic household life, not Vaishnav Grihastha Ashram, because Prahlad Maharaj himself, after speaking both of these verses, he got married. So, Hiranyakashipu, he became angry and he said to Prahlad Maharaj, oh, so you think you are more intelligent than me? You think that you can give advice to me? So, Prahlad Maharaj told him, Nate vidu swata gatim hi vishnum durashaya ye bahi atamanina andarya tanda upagiyamanas tempisha tantram urudamni badha. It means, those who think that the external sense objects are very valuable, very important, they are blind. They don't know that their real wealth is the lotus feet of Sri Vishnu. Such blind persons accept a guru who is also blind. And when the blind lead the blind, they all fall into the ditch. That means they all become more and more bound up in the tight ropes of karma in the physical world. So then Hiranyakashipu was very angry. He said, oh, you think that you are more intelligent than me, and now you're also insulting my guru, saying that I am blind and I am following my guru Shukracharya and he is also blind. So then Prahlad Maharaj, he said, Naisham matisthavad uru kramangrim sprishaktinata pagamayadata mahiyashangs padrajo bishekam nishkinchananam navrinita javat. He did not agree with his father and say, yes, you are blind and your guru is blind. But rather, he said, one cannot become free from blindness, or one cannot become free from anatta, unless one takes shower, one takes an abhishek in the dust of the lotus feet of a Nishkinchan Vaishnava. Nishkinchan means one who has no mamata, no feelings of possessiveness for anything in the material world. Because the Nishkinchan Vaishnava has prema, that means mamata or exclusive possessiveness for the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So, to take bath in the dust of the lotus feet of such a person means to pay obeisances to such a person, to surrender oneself to serving such a person, to listen to their katha, and to empty one's heart of material ideas, and pray that the mood, the loving sentiments of such a Vaishnava should appear in one's heart. This is the meaning of taking an abhishek, a shower in the dust of the lotus feet of a Nishkinchan Vaishnava, that one might also imbibe their mood of one-pointed mamata or possessiveness for the lotus feet of one's Ishtadev. Like Narottam Das Thakur said, Radha Krishna Pranamo Jugala Kishore Jivanai Marani Gati Arnahimo. The lotus feet of the divine couple, Sisi Radha Krishna, are my pran, my life and soul. In life and in death, I have no other refuge but their lotus feet. So when Prahlad Maharaj spoke like this, Hiranyakashipu became furious. He said, yes, just as if a part of your body becomes diseased, then you have to cut off that part of the body. Otherwise the disease will spread and contaminate the whole body. So in the same way, even though this boy is my own flesh and blood, my own son, now I will have to cut him away from our dynasty. And he called his guards, his soldiers, and told them, take this boy away and kill him. So then the soldiers, they took Prahlad and they gave him poison. But the poison tasted like nectar. They put him in a pit of snakes. But the snakes were very friendly to him. They threw him from the top of a cliff. But he did not die. Mysteriously, Lord Vishnu caught him and put him gently on the ground. They threw Prahlad Maharaj in front of a stampede of wild elephants. But the elephants all shrieked and ran in other directions, and none of them touched him. So again and again, by the grace of Shri Vishnu, Prahlad was saved. So Hiranyakashipu was very worried. He thought, why can't I kill this boy? And he was filled with anxiety. So then his sister, Holika, came and said, my dear brother, don't worry, I have a plan. I have a benediction from Lord Brahma that I am fireproof. So if you make a big funeral pyre and put a chair thrown on top, I'll sit there and I'll take my nephew in my lap and hold him tightly, then you can set fire to everything and he will be burnt to ashes. So Hiranyakashipu became somewhat encouraged and they made all the arrangements, and Holika, the sister of Hiranyakashipu, sat on the throne and called Prahlad, oh my dear nephew, please come and sit in the lap of your auntie Holika. So Prahlad came there and she took him in her lap and held him very tightly. And the demons set fire to the funeral pyre. And the flames went very high. They couldn't see anything. And after many hours, when the flames died down, they saw that Holika had been burnt to death and Prahlad was sitting there chanting Harinam. So then Hiranyakashipu became very disturbed. I can't kill this boy. Why not? Sanda and Amarka, Prahlad's teachers, came to Hiranyakashipu and said, don't worry about anything. Our father Shukacharya is away at the moment, but he will be returning very soon and he will know exactly what to do. So then Shukacharya, the sons of Shukacharya, Sanda and Amarka, they took Prahlad back to school and they continued to teach him about politics and diplomacy. And Prahlad, he acted like an ideal student. So when the teachers took their lunch break, they left Prahlad as the monitor of the class to make sure that the other boys didn't get up to any mischief. So the teachers went away and all the boys began to play. Prahlad Maharaj called them. Oh, my dear brothers, come and listen to me. I want to tell you something important about the goal of life. The boy said, oh Prahlad, we're young now. We want to play and have fun. We can think about philosophy and metaphysics and all these spiritual things when we're old. So then Prahlad Maharaj said, Kaumara acharat pragyo dharman bhagavatan hitan durlabha manusa janma yad apya dhruvam athadham. My dear friends, in this life, we may expect to live for 100 years. But those who are materialistic, they spend so much time sleeping that 50 years, half of their life, is wasted simply in sleeping. Then, first 10 years of life, of childhood, they're wasted in playing. And the next 10 years of life, they're wasted in, in getting an education and learning a trade, how to maintain oneself. The last 20 years of life, from 80 to 100, one has very ill health and for intents and purposes becomes useless. So then, how many years are left? How many years? Any mathematicians? keeping the score? Oh, 30 years. 30 years. 30 years are left in the middle. But Prahlad said, these 30 years go by very quickly. Because in 30 years, you have children. And you have to spend at least 18, 19, 20 years raising and taking care of each child. And at that time, you have to build a household and maintain your businesses and so on. And in this way, all time will be completely lost. So how will you find time for spiritual life? Therefore Prahlad said, Kamara Achat Pragya. One who is Pragya, intelligent, will try to engage in bhakti, the Bhagavad Dharma, from the very beginning of life, from childhood. Because this human life is very rare. And even though, like other lives, it is temporary and can be lost at any moment, but still, the human life can give the most valuable returns, the most valuable rewards, in the form of an eternal life of bliss in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, the children, they said to Prahlad Maharaj, so please teach us, how can we practice bhakti? So Prahlad Maharaj said, Guru Sursusraya Bhaktya Savalabdapanena Cha Sange Na Sadhu Bhaktanam Ishwararadanena Cha. First of all, to practice devotional service, Guru Sursusraya. Sursusraya means one should listen to the spiritual master with faith in his words. That means to listen with the intent that the instructions he's giving me, I will follow them in my life. And sarva labdarpanena cha. Being in Gurukul, one can beg here and there. And whatever one receives, one should not keep for himself. He should offer it to his spritual teacher. And sangena sadhu bhaktanam. One should also associate with the sadhus. Sadhu means one who has a sambandha, a relationship with Sat, the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, following the instructions of Guru, and in the association of pure Vaishnavas, Ishwararadhanena cha, one can engage in the aradhana, in the service of Ishwara, the Supreme Lord. And the boy said, Oh Prahlad, how did you learn all these things? So Prahlad said, when I was in the womb of my mother, the demigods, they came and they wanted to kill me because they thought that I would be like my father, Hiranyakashipu. But Narad Rishi came and told the demigods, don't kill this fetus because he will be a great devotee. So don't kill him. And the demigods, they all gave pranam and did parikrama of Kayadu, Prahlad's mother, and then they left. And then Narad Muni took Kayadu to Giriraj Govardhan, and they are very close to Kusham Sarova, at the place called Narad Kund. Kayadu heard Harikata from Narad Muni for 60,000 years at Govardhan. So Prahlad, being in the womb, he heard all of this katha. So automatically when he was born, he was a Mahabhagavat Vaishnava. So Prahlad explained that he had learned all these things from his Gurudev, Narad Rishi. And the boys decided to accept Prahlad Maharaj as their spiritual teacher. And by following him, the boys also became Mahabhagavats by his association. So Prahlad told them, everyone, chant the holy names. And they began to do kirtan together. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. and the loud tumultuous sound of Prahlad and all the other boys who had become Vaishnavas, their kirtan, it spread throughout the palace of Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, hearing the names of his arch enemy being chanted, became furious and ran there at once, taking a sword in his hand. And he approached Prahlad and he told him, "Hey Prahlad, how dare you defy me? Don't you know I am controlling the whole universe? All the demigods, they are afraid of me. Why are you not afraid of me? Where do you get your power from?" Prahlad Maharaj said, "I get my power from the same place that you and everyone else in the universe gets their power, from the Supreme Lord Shri Vishnu." So then Hiranyakashipu said, "Oh, so where is your Vishnu?" Prahlad Maharaj said, "He is everywhere." Hiranyakashipu said, "Is he in this pillar?" Prahlad Maharaj looked, and Lord Nrisimhadev from inside the pillar, he went and winked at Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj said, "Yes, he's in the pillar." Hiranyakashipu could not see him. Said, "Okay, well, let's see your Vishnu save you now when I sever your head from your body." And in anger, not with his sword, but with his fist, Hiranyakashipu punched the pillar and broke the stone, and then turned his attention to Prahlad and raised his sword to cut off his head. At that very moment, there was a terrifying, roaring sound came from behind Hiranyakashipu. He turned around to look to see where the sound was coming from. And an incredible creature that had the body of a human being and the head of a lion burst out from the stone pillar, roaring and causing the whole universe to tremble. So then Hiranyakashipu thought, "I have a benediction that I cannot be killed by any creature created by Lord Brahma. So I cannot be killed in the day or the night, on the land, in the air, in the sea." So Hiranyakashipu was very, very confident. And taking up his weapons, he rushed at Lord Nrisimhadev, who was so huge and effulgent, it seemed as if an insect was flying into a blazing fire. So they began to fight. And Lord Nrisimhadev was playing with Hiranyakashipu, just like Garuda, the king of the birds, plays with the snake. Sometimes when he caught Hiranyakashipu, all the demigods would say, "Jai, Jai, now his tyranny is coming to an end." But then the next moment, Hiranyakashipu would slip out from the grip of Lord Nrisimhadev, and all the demigods in fear would weep, "Alas, alas!" So Lord Nrisimhadev was enjoying a very good fight. And when the moment of dusk came, which is about now, it was neither day or night, the twilight. Then Lord Nrisimhadev, not inside or outside of the house, but on the doorway, on the threshold, he took Hiranyakashipu, not on the land or in the air, but on his own lap, and not with any weapons, but with his nails. And he burst open the abdomen of Hiranyakashipu and tore out his intestine and wore it around his neck like a garland. And he was roaring ferociously. Everyone was terrified. Lord Brahma told Lord Shiva, "Hey Mahadev, please offer prayers to the Lord." Lord Shiva said, "You go and offer prayers to the Lord." He didn't want to go near him. So then the demigods approached Lakshmi Devi and said, "Oh Lakshmi Devi, please pacify your husband." She said, "No, I don't want to go near him. I've never seen him this angry, in a mood like this." So Lakshmi Devi would not go. So then they all requested Prahlad, "Oh Prahlad, please pacify the Lord." So just as no one will go near a lion who has just killed an elephant and who is covered in blood and roaring ferociously, but the small cubs of that lion can easily run to him and jump on his head, on his mane, and play with him. So in the same way, Prahlad, just like a lion cub, without any fear, ran towards Lord Nrisimhadev and jumped into his lap. And at once Lord Nrisimhadev, who is actually the predominating deity of Vatsalya Ras, parental love, he took Prahlad in his arms and embraced him and spoke to him with tears in his eyes. He said, "Oh Prahlad, please forgive me for coming so late. For my sake, you have undergone so many trials and tribulations. So please forgive me and accept a benediction from me." Prahlad Maharaj said, "Oh my Lord, I am not a businessman, I am not a merchant, that I have engaged in your service so that you would pay me something. So I don't want to take a benediction." But Lord Nrisimhadev insisted, "Oh, please accept a benediction." So then Prahlad Maharaj said, "Oh my Lord, if at all you want to bestow upon me a benediction, then give me this benediction, that there will be no material desires in the core of my heart." Lord Nrisimhadev thought, this boy is very intelligent. He's trying to avoid receiving a benediction. He said, "Already there are no material desires in your heart, so you should ask for something else." So then Prahlad Maharaj said, "Then give me this benediction, that my father, who had committed so many offenses against me, should not go to hell for these offenses, but rather he should be liberated." So then Lord Nrisimhadev thought, "Oh, Prahlad, again he's trying to avoid accepting a benediction, because 7 generations of the dynasty of a Kanishta Adhikari, a neophyte devotee, are liberated. For a Madhyam Adhikari, the intermediate devotee, then 14 generations are automatically liberated. And for a Mahabhagavat Vaishnava, automatically 21 generations are liberated." So Prahlad Maharaj is a Mahabhagavat. So Lord Nrisimhadev said to him, "Oh, you are pure, and therefore you have already delivered 21 generations of your family. So you should ask for another benediction." So Prahlad Maharaj said, "Please give me the benediction that all the karma of all the living entities of the universe should be given to me, and I will taste the results of their activities, and they should all be liberated from this world." Then Lord Nrisimhadev, he said, "Oh Prahlad, I am defeated. You have defeated me, because I cannot give you this benediction. I cannot allow you to suffer for the activities of others. But I will give you this benediction. I declare that anyone who will hear or chant our pastime together, they must be liberated from this world very soon and attain pure bhakti." Gaura Premanande. So we are very fortunate to have the opportunity to hear about the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Narasimhadev, because simply by hearing and chanting these pastimes, our human life can become successful. Prahlad Maharaj's bhakti was extraordinary. He would sit alone, absorbed in thoughts of Lord Vishnu, and feeling separation, he would shed tears of love. And sometimes in his separation, he could feel that Lord Vishnu had come and touched him. And feeling the touch of the Lord, his body would tremble and hairs stand on end in ecstasy. Sometimes Prahlad would become so absorbed in the pastimes of Bhagavan that he would identify with Bhagavan himself and spontaneously begin to enact the pastime, thinking, "Oh Krishnoham, I am Krishna," and perform so many pastimes. So he was so deeply absorbed. And also, when Indra became embarrassed about inundating Vrindavan and trying to destroy the bridge passes, on the order of Lord Brahma, he came to Brajamandal, to Giriraj Govardhan, with Surabhi, and he performed an abhishek of Sri Krishna and begged for forgiveness. So at that time, various demigods from around the universe, they also came to Govardhan and took part in the Abhishek ceremony, in which Krishna was given the title Gavendra or Govinda, the Lord of the Cows. So at that time, Prahlad Maharaj also came to Braj Mandal and performed Abhishek of Sri Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj is very fortunate. He also had the chance to participate in Sri Krishna's Brajalila. So on this day, we remember the divine appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev and the disappearance day of Hiranyakashipu and all the wonderful qualities of the devotion of Sri Prahlad Maharaj. And we pray that they will be pleased with us and sprinkle their mercy, that we should also have a very intense devotional service. Intense, like the devotion of Prahlad Maharaj, but not in his mood. Prahlad Maharaj is a Jnani Bhakta. It means that his devotion is transcendental, but he has complete knowledge of the opulence of the Lord. And therefore, he knows that God has millions of forms, and all of these forms are different forms of the same one Lord. And therefore, Prahlad does not give any special preference to one form or another. He has no specific Ishtadev. But in the Shuddha Bhaktas, the Premi Bhaktas, Prematura Bhakta, the Premapara Bhakta and Prematura Bhakta, they have a specific Ishtadev. They can know that all the different forms of God, they're all forms of God, but one should have some partiality towards one form only. So especially in our line of Srila Rupa Goswami, our one-pointed mood is towards Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, in a mood of serving them, in utter forgetfulness of their opulence, in complete forgetfulness that they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His Shakti. So this kind of prem, the prem of Prahlad Maharaj, is extremely rare and extremely high. But the kind of prem that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving, that he gives only once in a day of Brahma, is so much superior and much more rare even than a love like Prahlad Maharaj. One may think that how can persons such as ourselves, being so unqualified in Kali Yuga, attain a love which is so much greater than the love of Prahlad Maharaj, who is so much more qualified than us? And the answer is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most merciful incarnation of Sri Krishna, has appeared in Kali Yuga just to give this love. He came here to give this love. When Mahaprabhu went to Kashi, he said, "I have come here like a merchant, and I have a very great wealth, very valuable bhav, emotional